welcome to Conscious Dating Monthly Teleseminar. What we're going to do today is talk about the topic of using conscious dating to find your soulmate. In this, we're going to learn whether soulmates are real, can we really find our soulmate, are we chasing a fantasy, and how do I find my soulmate? We're going to turn this over to conscious dating author David Steele and his wonderful, beautiful soulmate, Darlene, and they're going to discuss with us these things about whether we can find our soulmate and how we can use conscious dating to do that.
Thank you, Kim. We are very excited to be doing this program with you today because this is the absolute first time that we've ever talked about this in public. The idea of soulmates is a little abstract and maybe a little woo-woo and means something different to everybody, but it's a concept that's very, very important to me, and we really do feel like we have found our soulmate in each other. So our plan is to share with you a little bit about what our life was like before we met each other, and then how we met and how we initially realized that we were soulmates, and then talk a little bit about our perception of the difference between a life partner and a soulmate. And this is just opinion. This is, you know, a soulmate is whatever you want it to be. There's no absolute truth about that, but we'll share our truth. Then we'll get into using conscious dating to find your soulmate. Most everybody on the call is familiar with what conscious dating is and the principles of conscious dating, the strategies and all that. And we'll speak specifically to how to apply conscious dating to find your soulmate as opposed to, you know, something else. So I've been elected to start off with my life before Darlene, but before I do, anything you want to say?
Well, yeah, I wanted to say hello because I haven't even opened my mouth yet on this call, so just glad to be here, and I'm really excited to hear this. I mean, we haven't kind of rehearsed what we were going to say, so I'm really looking forward to what David has to say here.
And actually, this is the first time we've ever co-presented.
On a teleseminar, yeah.
So you want to go first or...
Oh, no, you're first.
I'm not attached. Okay, so my life before Darlene. Well, you know, most of you know my story. I had a pretty unhappy childhood. I'm the child of divorce. My mother raised me as a single parent, and she was very unhappy. And I really couldn't figure out why and what the problem was, and I felt very guilty and responsible, and she didn't help by making me responsible. So I had a fairly miserable childhood, and I grew up kind of trying to figure out, how can I be happy? How can I find a life partner and live happily ever after and have a happy, successful life? And so that's really what motivated me to get into the field of studying psychology and behavior and human beings and sociology and becoming a therapist and then becoming a relationship coach. And I married young. My first marriage was pretty young. I was 22 years old when we got married. She was 19 when we got engaged. And I felt ready. I felt mature. I had to grow up early. But man, oh man, I had no clue about relationships, especially picking a partner. And I married the first woman who said she loved me. And we were young, and we lasted 10 years, and we had one child together. And then we got divorced. And that was pretty devastating for me. I took my vows seriously, and I really wanted to be married for life because I didn't experience that as a child. So it's a value that I really highly held. So it was pretty devastating to me. I mean, you can't go back. If you want to marry one person for life, you know, that one divorce will pretty much shatter that dream. So you can't go back. So here I was divorced, and I had to rebuild my life and start all over. And a couple of years later, I met a woman, and it was very much a push-pull relationship. And there was a lot of differences, though, with my first marriage that I really appreciated. A lot of things that I got out of that relationship that I wasn't getting in my first marriage. And I just got sucked into a very addictive kind of thing. And that blew up after 8 years. And we had twins together, twin boys. So here I am, you know, two divorces, three biological children, feeling like the ultimate failure. And this is after I've written the book Conscious Dating, because I had made, you know, a study of how can you find your life partner? How can you live happily after? how can you do that consciously? And I very much wanted to do that in my own life. But I was making every mistake in the book. And on the one hand, that's okay because it makes me a more effective teacher. You know, I know how things go wrong. I can speak from experience. On the other hand, I just felt like a failure. So after that relationship, after that divorce, that second divorce, a couple years later, I got involved with a woman. We moved in together. We blended families. It lasted 5 years, and that blew up. And, man, now I really felt like a failure. And I decided, you know, no more jumping into committed relationships. I'm going to take my time. I'm going to go slow. I'm going to be very, very careful. I don't want to repeat my patterns anymore. So a little later on, I got involved with a woman who I call an 80% relationship. You can probably relate to this. You know, there's so much that is right. There's so much that is in alignment. You know, 80% or better. But I could never let go of that 20% that wasn't in alignment, that didn't quite work. And, you know, we struggled for a year. I tried to break it off after the first 3 months. But a year later, I finally broke it off for good. And that was in August 2007. So what I did was I posted my profile on, you know, internet matchmaking sites. And in November of 2007, after meeting a bunch of women online that were nothing in common with, and if you're single and you've been dating and you've been, you know, searching for somebody, you know, it can be very frustrating, huh? So a couple months of meeting lots of people that I had nothing in common with, I got really frustrated, and I wrote what I call my manifesto. And my manifesto is composed of my requirements, but it's also, to me, a very, very strong stand of who I am and what I'm looking for and what I won't settle for less than. And so I'd like to share that with you. Here goes. There are six things. Number one is strong chemistry. I want to desire my partner, be excited by my partner at a chemical, physical level. I experienced this before and learned that it's crucial for a passionate, alive, long-term relationship. Secondly, number two, I require to be loved, understood, and accepted deeply for who I am. My partner needs to get me so well that I don't need to constantly explain where I'm coming from, what I'm thinking, feeling, intending, or meaning. I felt misunderstood for most of my life by the people closest to me that didn't get me. My best friendship, my best relationships were with people that did get me. They were practically able to see inside me and understand where I'm coming from. You know, I'm not that complicated a guy. My most difficult relationships are with people that see me through their filters, so opaque with their own stuff that my good heart and my good intentions are unseen. Number three, I require a relationship that brings out the best in me as I bring out the best in my partner. This might mean challenging each other a little bit, but it mostly means loving and supporting each other with positive energy, believing in each other 100%, getting each other so well that the relationship is safe and emotionally free. That's how we bring the best out in each other. It's truly safe and emotionally free. Number four, I require positive, optimistic, joyful thoughts, actions, attitudes, and energy in my life and relationship. I grew up with a lot of unhappiness and negativity. My personality, my nature is very positive, optimistic, and adventurous about life, and I want a partner that shares that so we can live in that space together. In this context, problems are a challenge to be met with positive energy, optimism, not as indicators that something or someone is wrong. Number five, I require a relationship that has a higher mission than personal happiness. If you know anything about me, then you know that, you know, I'm very purposeful in my work and my life. I have a mission. I want to help make a difference in the world. You know, I have a passion for relationships. I want to share my life with somebody who is also has a strong mission. Doesn't have to be the exact same, but to be of service in the world, to show up in the world, to make a difference. I really wanted to be able to share that. Number six, I require a strong spiritual connection, so strong that we feel connected when we're apart or if one of us is traveling. When you are complete and whole, you don't need your partner to complete you or do or say anything for you to be okay. When you have two complete and whole people that love each other, they can be apart, The love and connection doesn't diminish, go away, or sink into emotional deficit. I've been in lots of relationships where it felt like an emotional deficit all the time, together or apart. And, by the way, there's seven. So number seven, I require a soulmate. Now, again, I wrote this in August 2007, and I decided to make a soulmate my requirement. Now, to me, in my language, that means I'm going to say no to anybody that isn't my soulmate. Now, that's pretty scary. I was totally prepared to be alone for the rest of my life. So my soulmate will match and mirror me in some ways, complement and challenge me in others, fitting me like a hand in glove with results, which results in manifesting all of the other six requirements I just mentioned. This is no ordinary relationship that can be achieved with just anyone, especially by settling. While I don't believe there is only one specific soulmate for anyone, I do believe in a connection that goes beyond the present sensory world and is meant to be. The best evidence I have for the existence of soulmates are couples I've known that fit together so well they seem to belong together. It seems like they've always been together, and you can't imagine them not being together. I want a relationship like that. Now, I wrote that in August 2007. In November 2007, I made first contact with...
It wasn't me, because we met in December.
Well, we first had first contact online in November.
In December.
Okay, all right. So, in December, okay, so August, September, October. Darlene's looking up the proof. She records everything. So, I wrote this in August 2007. In December 2007, I met Darlene. So, here is Darlene.
Oh, sorry, I was still looking up the date.
I believe you. Go ahead and prove it.
Well, while you're looking up the date, Darlene, I just want to say, David, that I really appreciate you sharing all that. You know, it's a lot of really personal information, but I think it's going to be really helpful to a lot of people to see how you wrote that all down, and you just didn't make a list. You explained every single one of those requirements that you had on your manifesto.
Right, and because I wrote this book called Conscious Dating, and it's because I'm supposed to be some leader in the field, I have to live a pretty transparent life. I have to share with people what I'm up to. I can't hide. I mean, I could try to hide, but I can't. So I actually published this in my newsletter that month, and it's also online. So if you go to DarleneandDavid.com, you can read it for yourself.
The other really fascinating thing with that is that he did not set the bar low. Right. You set the bar really, really high, and to make a commitment that you're not going to settle for anything less than where you set the bar, that's pretty admirable.
It is, because it's really scary to do that sometimes.
I was sure I was going to be alone for the rest of my life, absolutely positive, but I was so sick of 80% relationships and relationship failure, I really felt strongly that I had to do that.
Well, and thank goodness you did. So, Darlene, let's just hear your wonderful story.
Well, I don't know if it's wonderful. I guess it ended leading
to... Well, it ended wonderfully.
Yeah, it ended leading to David, so that's pretty good. My story is quite a bit different because I actually was married for 23 years to my first husband. We also got married really young. I was like 23, I think, when we got married. You know, the ironic thing about marrying him was that he was actually the first guy that I ever dated who we fought. Every other person I had ever dated were nice guys that I really liked, and we just didn't work out for some reason. So what do? I marry the first one that I ever consistently get in fights with. It just didn't make sense. In fact, I knew before we actually got married that I wanted out of the relationship, but we had bought a car together. It was my first car that I had ever bought. He co-signed for the car, and in my young mind, it's too late. We bought a car together. We have this financial commitment. So even though I would have liked to have not gone through with the wedding, I did because, you know, it was too late. So
you're committed.
Yeah, I was committed. So we were married for a long time, and it wasn't like it was all bad, right? A lot of things that we actually were similar in, like we had a really similar sense of humor, so we did laugh a lot together. But on the other side, when things weren't good, they were really not good. We had a lot of differences that were really things that were very important to me and made life pretty miserable for both of us. He was pretty miserable with me too. So, you know, we just didn't seem to make sense as a couple. So for years and years and years, I kind of fantasized about what a real marriage, you know, what a marriage that I had dreamed about would be like. You know, I wanted it to feel supportive and nurturing. You know, I just wanted to feel safe. And so over those years, I made kind of a mental list of what it was that worked in the relationship and what kind of things didn't work, what I would look for if I ever got the guts to divorce, what would I look for in a partner. So I did that for years. I spent years making my list. And I think one of the things that really started getting me closer to ending the marriage was one time I was in, I'm not sure what class it was, but it was a college course, and we went over Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I had seen this many times before in my life, but if you're not familiar with Maslow's, it categorizes different needs and kind of puts them in order of which needs you'll need to have met first. Let me give an example. If you can't breathe, you need to take care of that before you're going to try and organize your closets if you're a neat freak. The need for physiological stuff comes first. And you work your way up the ladder. Physiological things like breathing, safety and security, to love and belonging, to self-esteem, finally get into the top where you get self-actualization. And that's where you really, you know, you can reach your maximum potential and realize your abilities and qualities. I remember sitting in that class going, thinking to myself, I really want to get to the top of that pyramid, but I can't because I'm so busy living in the bottom parts, trying to feel safe, trying to feel loved, trying to keep my self-esteem intact, I knew I wasn't going to reach the top of the pyramid. So I know that that kind of was one of the turning points for me, that I knew that I needed to make a change.
Well, can I add a couple of things that I know about your story?
Okay.
The first thing is that what's common with that Darlene did, that many women do, is she waited until her kids were grown. And secondly, what she didn't say, because she's much too nice, is something that we have in common, actually, is that both of our exes were addicts of one kind or another. So it wasn't just, you know, a little bit of unhappiness. It was severe dysfunction.
Okay, so...
Just putting things in perspective.
So I remember actually then going through the process of actually trying to make the decision, you know, I need to leave. It was the worst thing I've ever gone through. I mean, I was literally having anxiety attacks, a couple times panic attacks, just the whole idea of actually... It wasn't me so much. It was actually turning my ex-husband's life upside down. I knew he was going to be devastated, and I'm a very nurturing person. The idea of actually hurting somebody that bad it was really painful to me. But once I made the decision, the day actually that I made the decision and actually walked out the door, the feeling of calmness was incredible. I felt at peace. I knew I had made the right decision. It really was just a wonderful feeling. So then I lived by myself. It was actually the first time I'd ever lived by myself in my entire life. I got an apartment, lived by myself for about a year. I didn't date that time. I didn't want to. I really wanted to clear my head. I wanted to discover myself. You know, I had been with my first husband for so long, I really didn't know if the activities that I did because he liked to do them, were they really things that I liked to do? I just really felt like I had lost myself in that relationship. So I really wanted to kind of discover myself, figure out what I wanted out of life, figure out what made me happy. And I got to pursue a lot of the things that I really liked to do. It was a lot of fun. So then I decided I was going to start dating. I didn't go all out to start dating. I kind of put my toe in the water. I kind of had more like going out with male friends who, it was kind of like platonic relationships and just going out just to see what that kind of felt like. And this one particular man, John, that I saw a number of times, once again, it was kind of a platonic relationship. We just had a couple interests in common, so we went out a couple times. We went to dinner and things like that. And it was funny because at that time I was kind of measuring John against my mental list, you know, trying to see where he fit in there. And I realized that, you know, he's a really nice guy. I really enjoyed his company. I liked to share the common interests, but I knew he wasn't the guy for me. You know, there were just things that weren't right about him. And so one day we went out to dinner and we came back to my apartment and he decided to kiss me goodnight, and not the kind of kiss that you give to your brother. You know, this was a romantic kind of kiss. The funny thing about that is that I went from thinking that this is my platonic friend to thinking, oh my God, am I falling in love, in a nanosecond. It was amazing. I felt like I was out of control almost. I was giddy and I had a hard time sleeping that night. Well, I woke up in the next morning and I thought, oh wait, my logic kicked in and I thought, this is ridiculous. Yesterday I knew logically that this man wasn't for me. He kissed me and all of a sudden, you know, he's Prince Charming. I knew that it wasn't real. I knew that I was just taken over by chemicals. So I actually did some research. I tried, as I kind of do, because that's the kind of person I am. I researched what it was all about. I realized, you know, that he wasn't really the guy for me. And I met David just a couple weeks later.
And now we get to talk a little bit about how we knew we had found our soulmate, when that initial realization was, and we were talking about that earlier today. You know, the very first time we met, I couldn't get this, you know, thought out of my head. This woman is adorable. This woman is adorable. You know, I just couldn't get that thought out of my head. And usually when I meet a woman for the first time, you know, it's, I've been around the block before. I'm a therapist / coach, for crying out loud. I work with people. So meeting somebody the first time and having a conversation and getting to know who they are, you know, that's very comfortable, very normal and natural. But there was something very special about her. But at the time, I didn't know she was my soulmate. I would say the first realization that this is it was actually after a 5-hour marathon session of talking about our relationship and our future together and what we wanted and making sure we were on the same page and going over pages and pages and pages of printed out emails from RCI coaches, because I had sent out an email message to the RCI coaches list saying, you know, hey, I met somebody. And yeah, I realize it's only been a week or two later now, but I'm thinking this might be the one. And a little bit of information there. So I was interested in a reality check. I wanted feedback. I wanted their support and whatever they had to say about that. And there were some that thought I was crazy. There's others that said, hey, go for it. Probably the thing that stuck with me the most, the kind of that I hung on to when I was feeling very kind of anxious and unsure about this whole thing, because we hadn't known each other all that long, was when it's right, it's right. And when you know yourself well enough and you know, you understand relationships and you get to know this other person, when it's right, it's right. And it just seems so right. And so 5 hours later, after we go through all these emails, you know, good, bad, and indifferent, and we look at our relationship and each other from all sides, all possible angles, and then, you know, we're looking at each other after the 5 hours later and saying, yeah, this is it. Let's do it. You know, let's be a couple. You know, that was our transition to what I call pre-commitment, right? From singles into a couple. We did that very, very, very consciously. So that was the moment in which I realized that this person was my soulmate. Darlene, how about you?
You know, I you know, there wasn't really one exact moment. But I remember even from the time that we, you know, we met on an online site, and I actually, in front of me, I have all of our emails printed out. I printed all of them out, and I have them here. We'll go over those later. They're actually a lot of fun to read. But I remember just our first contacts on email were different than contacts I had with other people on the site. There was something quite different. And the kind of funny thing about it is I know during my first marriage, one of the things that kept popping in my mind is I want to find somebody that's more like me. You know, my first husband and I had too many differences. I want to find somebody who's more like me. And our writing style, David, my writing style is very similar. We, including, you know, using dashes, using ellipses, just even our punctuation style and capitalization, and it was very, very similar. And what made me laugh was that I'm thinking, oh, you know, it's almost like self-love, right? I
You actually said one day, you're a male me.
Yeah, that was really important to me, because kind of like David about people not getting me, I didn't want to have to explain my whole life away. I just didn't want to take the energy to do that kind of stuff. So I really wanted to find somebody who was more similar to me. And I remember that was even before we met in person. So I fell in love with you before we even met in person.
I didn't know that. So I think now would probably be a good time to talk about the difference between life partner and soulmate, because we recognize each other as soulmates. And what does that really mean? I mean, you know, for me, I've had life partners. I've fallen in love. I've gotten married. I've had long-term relationships with people that I would call life partners. And what they all have in common is that it was not the whole package. There was always, you know, something missing. It didn't quite feel right. It felt good a lot. It felt almost complete, but not totally complete. And there were always issues. There was always unmet needs. And oftentimes more on their part than my part, because I tend to be the pleaser, the codependent, the loyal person. And, you know, I tend to hook up with, you know, rather, you know, demanding, unpleasable women, like my mother. Go figure. So in my mind, a life partner is somebody that you enter a relationship with who meets your requirements, hopefully, and, you know, you can live happily ever after with them, but it's, you know, it has its limits. With a soulmate, what I've learned, what I've found, what I've experienced for the first time in my life, now it's 4 years later, you know, since we've gotten together, is we never get tired of each other.
Thank goodness, since we're never, you know, more than like 6 feet apart.
You know, Darlene left her profession of nursing, she's an RN, to work with me in Relationship Coaching Institute. She's our director of business development. And so we share an office. We're together all the time, 24/7. And we never tire of each other. And wherever we go, we're always touching. And we walk down the street, we're holding hands. We, you know, go in restaurants, we're holding hands. We're at meetings, we're holding hands. We're, you know, you name it. And, you know, people look at us and, oh, how cute. You know, other people look at us and say, boy, that's pretty strange. You know, they're kind of old to be doing that. But it just comes very naturally to us to, you know, be connected, to stay connected. And when we hike, for example, 10-mile hikes up and down mountains and you know, sweating like a dog and having trouble breathing and, you know, the whole thing, we're still holding hands. So there's something about this, you know, mental, emotional, spiritual, physical connection with a soulmate that is unlike anything else. And it feels complete. It feels 100%. Everything that I mentioned in my manifesto and more. I had no expectation that Darlene would leave her profession of nursing. I appreciated that she was a nurse. I appreciated she was mission-oriented and really wanted to help people and make a difference in the world that way. I wanted to support her in doing that. She independently decided to leave her profession and work with me. And, you know, we have the kind of dream lifestyle that I thought was possible, but I never thought I would have it. I've seen couples work together and live together and travel together and write books together and, you know, all that, present together like we're doing now. And, you know, I've always thought, I want to be like that. I never thought, you know, it would actually happen. But it has. And so we are accomplishing things together that I could never have accomplished myself with other partners, any other partner I could have never have accomplished. For example, I give you a URL, CampbellWorkingTogether.org. Here's a community service project in our own little town of Campbell. It's something that we're doing together. We made it up on our own because of who we are together, the synergy that we have. And I've never experienced that, you know, anywhere else. So, again, the idea of a soulmate is, in my mind, it's individual to each person. There's theories out there. There's definitions out there. But it's really, you need to have your own. But I'll tell you, Richard Bach came up with a definition of soulmate that I really like. And so I want to share it with you right now. He's the guy that wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull. A soulmate is someone who has locks that fit our keys and keys to fit our locks. When we feel safe enough to open the locks, our truest selves step out, and we can be completely and honestly who we are. We can be loved for who we are and not for who we're pretending to be. Each unveils the best part of each other. No matter what else goes wrong around us with what that one person, we're safe in our own paradise. Our soulmate is someone who shares our deepest longings, our sense of direction. When we're two balloons and together our direction is up, chances are we found the right person. Our soulmate is the one who makes life come to life. With Darlene, I feel truly, 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 truly safe and accepted and loved for who I am for the first time ever in my life. I can be who I am. I can say whatever. I can fart. I can pick my nose.
I can
say anything. I can have any feeling, any thought, any impulse. It is absolutely okay and safe. And the security and the... Again, the synergy, you know, she gets me, I get her, I feel appreciated and loved. She's easy to please. If anything, it's too easy. She doesn't make me work hard enough.
That's because you're just like me, so, you know.
You know, sometimes I feel like I should be working harder to please, but, you know, that's my stuff about needing to earn love and not feeling quite worthy.
You know, one of the things that really helped us be able to get to this was because when we first met, neither one of us were putting on anything.
Authentic.
We were being authentic. I decided very consciously that I was, when I started dating, I was just going to be what I am. I was not going to dress differently than I dress. I wasn't going to put on makeup because I don't wear makeup. I wasn't going to fix my hair fancy. I wasn't going to do anything that I don't do day to day. I wasn't going to eat dainty or nothing. I was going to be me from the get-go. And David, obviously, he's like that too. So that really helped. That really helped because we fell in love with the people that we really are instead of falling in love with what we wanted to pretend like we were.
Hopefully that's helpful, you know, in terms of the difference between a life partner and a soulmate. We can only share with you our own experience and definition of soulmate, and you can have your own. And it's my strong desire, personally, for myself, I've always wanted a soulmate. I've always wanted that, you know, one other special person that was just right for me, that I can live happily ever after with. And it's always been my lifelong desire to help other people do that as well, to be a relationship coach type person and to make a difference in the world that way. So that was the motivation behind writing the book Conscious Dating. And so maybe this is a good time to talk about using conscious dating to find your soulmate. And conscious dating can help you find your life partner, absolutely no problem. Finding your soulmate is, you know, raises the bar a little bit. So let's talk about some of those differences. And, you know, in our story, you've heard quite a lot of them because, you know, I practiced conscious dating, Darlene practiced conscious dating, and she didn't even know what it was. So in conscious dating, when you want to find, you know, the love of your life, you need to be ready and available for that. That's kind of where we start. We need to be ready for a committed relationship. We need to be available, meaning we're single, meaning we're not involved with somebody else. And on our website at ConsciousDating.com, we have a relationship readiness quiz, Conscious Dating Quiz. You can check that out. So that's kind of where conscious dating starts. And then there's four steps for conscious dating: scouting, sorting, screening, and testing. You know, I'm not going to go into that right now. You know, it's on the website, it's in the book, it's in other programs that we've done. That process, the difference here is that, you know, and I've mentioned these concepts before of screening out versus screening in, that when you are practicing the four steps of conscious dating and you are seeking your soulmate or your life partner, you can practice screening out or screening in. So screening in is you're going to give everybody a chance. You're going to find ways that it could work. And you have a hard time, you know, saying no or rejecting anybody. Screening out is the opposite. Is you're going to say no to anybody and everybody that isn't perfect for you. And for a lot of people, that's scary because they don't believe that there's any one right person for them. They don't really believe that their soulmate is out there. So, you know, they want to find somebody that's close enough. And that was me for years. You know, find somebody that's close enough. I don't believe that I can ever get what I really want, so I'll settle for something that's the best I can find. But screening out, when I wrote my manifesto and I accepted the idea that I could be alone for the rest of my life, then I really drew that line in the sand and practiced screening out. Only then was I able to find my soulmate. So that's the other concept. The difference between finding a life partner and finding a soulmate is you can be life partners with lots and lots of different kinds of people. Your soulmate, you need to narrow that down even further to a partner that is so right for you on all levels. And again, I don't believe there's any one person. I don't believe this is predestined, although it might be. Who knows? You know, we don't know the answer to that. But you're not going to find them if you settle for any less than that. And if you don't settle and you seek, I believe you will find. So being willing to persevere, being willing to stick it out, being willing to stay single for, you know, days, weeks, years, you know, to do what it takes. And for me, what I learned about conscious dating in terms of finding your soulmate was the slogan that I came to was, I'd rather be single than settle. And that, you know, for me, that slogan really helped me stay in line. I'd rather be single than settle. I wrote an article about it. It became my one biggest learning about conscious dating ever. If I had to sum up, if I had to give one piece of advice to singles out there to help them get what they really wanted in their life and relationship, what would that be? It would be don't settle. It would be take the position of I'd rather be single than settle. I'd rather be alone for the rest of my life than settle. But, you know, it doesn't mean doing nothing about it. Of course you're not going to, you know, be passive and stay in one place. You're going to go after what you want. But you're going to go after what you really want rather than settle for what you can find. So what are some other differences? You know, the law of attraction operates here the same way it does in any way, like attracts like. So if you are in a space of, I want to find my soulmate, I'm not going to settle for less, then the law of the universe called the law of attraction will help you if you help it. And how are you going to help the law of attraction? By being a successful single, by living the life you really want, living it to the fullest, by staying available, by not getting involved with the relationships that aren't right for you. And I think one of the biggest ones is to get support for whatever your weakest link is. We all have a weakest link. We all have the ways that we trip ourselves up or sabotage ourselves. And so here's a couple of questions for you. What is likely to sabotage you? What's most likely to cause you to settle? Because we all have these buttons. We all have our vulnerabilities and weak links and weak areas. And getting support for those is crucial because they are our weaker areas. So it's really hard to, you know, make them strong all by ourselves. So for me, I will tell you that, you know, one of my deepest vulnerable areas was feeling like I wasn't worthy of it, that I didn't really deserve it. So it wasn't really going to happen because I didn't really deserve it. And I almost sabotaged this relationship because when Darlene and I first got together, and I was looking for red flags. So here I am. I'm the relationship coach. I'm the author of Conscious Dating. I'm saying all relationships have red flags. What are the red flags here? And I couldn't find any. And I wasn't believing myself. I wasn't trusting myself. And I was actually starting to panic and say, well, wait a minute, you know, I'm being delusional. I'm fooling myself here. And the proof that I'm fooling myself is I can't find any red flags. Because the fork, of course, has red flags. And so I called one of my mentors, who is one of my favorite relationship coaches in the whole wide world. I called her up. And I said, I met someone. I'm in love. And she's perfect in every way. And we're in love. And it feels like this is my soulmate. But I'm scared to death because I can't find any red flags. And that can't be true. That can't be right. Nothing is so perfect. And she, I mean, this we were about 3,000 miles apart at the time. But, you know, over the phone, she sat me on her knee. And she wisely said, David, stop looking for red flags. You'll create them. You will destroy this relationship. So just enjoy it. Let it be what it is. You're mature enough. You're aware enough to know if you're fooling yourself. So trust yourself. Trust your relationship. Stop looking for red flags. That phone call, I honestly believe, saved my life, saved our relationship. Without that support, I honestly don't think we would be together. I would have sabotaged this because I didn't feel like I deserved it. I didn't feel like it was possible, even though it's what I wanted the most. So it's an example of probably the most crucial way to get what you really want out of life, including a soulmate, is get the support you need. And so please do consider these two questions. They're the same question, actually. It's just two different ways of framing it. What is likely to sabotage you? What's most likely to cause you to settle? Because if you don't want to settle, and if you want to find your soulmate, you need support to stay on that path. It absolutely can't happen unless you get yourself off that path. And as Darlene and I were talking about this today, and Darlene brought up the idea of authenticity, on how important that is and how a lot of singles don't, you know, they're not authentic. They don't think they can be authentic because people will reject them and because they don't feel worthy as they are. I came up with the word ruthlessly authentic. And Darlene thought that was too strong. But to me,
it sounds violent.
I'm a guy, testosterone, you know. So the idea of being ruthlessly authentic, to be willing to drive people away that you are so authentically who you are, you're not holding anything back. As an example, Darlene likes Keen shoes. Keen shoes, if you've ever seen them, they look a little bit funky. They got an unusual shape.
They're adorable.
Kind of like Birkenstocks, you know, that some people love them and some people hate them. Well, I love Keen shoes, and we both have our collection of Keen shoes now. So don't worry about the people that don't like Keen shoes if you like Keen shoes. Be ruthlessly authentic and wear your Keen shoes.
Well, because the only people that you're going to really drive away are people who don't like Keen shoes, and you really don't want to be with those people anyway.
And Darlene doesn't like makeup. She doesn't consider herself a girly girl. And that's just fine with me. She is adorable. She is sexy. She is beautiful. Without all that, she doesn't need all that. I don't value all that anyway. I value what's on the inside. And, you know, all that outside stuff, you know, I've had that in the past. It, you know, wears off pretty fast. And it's not real. What's real is on the inside. So that's my parting advice on how to find your soulmate, how to use conscious dating to find your soulmate, is to be ruthlessly authentic. Be willing to drive people away by being fully who you are so that you can attract the one who you really, really want to be with, who really, really gets you, who is really, really meant for you. So, Kim, that's everything we got.
Wow. That was really great. Thank you so much for sharing all that. And I understand exactly what you're talking about because I found my soulmate, too. And everything that you were describing, because we are together 24/7, too, you know, you never get tired of each other because it's just right. And you know when it's right.
And you guys live on a boat, which is even smaller than our office.
Yes, we do.
It's really got to work.
But it works really well because we love being together. And so I really appreciated your description of all that because as you were describing it, I was sitting here looking at Bob and nodding my head and understanding completely what you were talking about. And, you know, I came to a lot of the same conclusions. You can't settle for something that isn't right. And so many times we do that. Appreciate very much everything that you shared. It was wonderful.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to, for the first time, share our story and talk about being soulmates and what a soulmate is. And we had a lot of fun talking about the program and putting it together and presenting together and presenting together for the first time. It's way cool. So thank you very much for having us. And we're going to sign off and go to dinner now and leave you guys to your teleclinic.